Next case, Reliance National Insurance versus Great Lakes Aviation, Mr. Goggin.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Jim Goggin. I'm here on behalf of the appellants Berger, Bevel, DeSalle, Brueck, Carlson, Heffelblower, and Reed. These are the personal representatives of the estates of passengers who were in a Beech 1900 commuter plane operated by Great Lakes Aviation and manufactured by the defendant Raytheon, were killed in an aircraft runway collision in Quincy, Illinois in 1996, almost 9 years ago. All liability and compensation issues with respect to the passengers who were in the plane in Great Lakes and Raytheon have been resolved following the settlement of a number of state court proceedings in St. Clair County, Illinois. There were questions of liability and compensation with respect to the owners and pilot and co-pilot of the King Air plane, which was taking off at the same time as the Beech plane was landing, which collided with the plane and caused the accident. And those all have been resolved by a jury trial in state court in Illinois of the direct action by the pilots of the smaller plane.
Okay, get to the point.
The point is, Your Honor, first I'll talk about the standard of review on the case.
No, how about this? Why don't you just focus? There's attached to your brief at page A19 is the full release and settlement agreement between your clients and all these listed parties, pretty much everybody, Great Lakes, Raytheon, the owners of the plane. And then, for some reason, 2 pages later, at A21, there's this paragraph 3.8. And the settlement settles everything, and then it says, without reservation, except as set forth in paragraph 3.8. And paragraph 3.8 preserves the rights, whatever they may be, of both sides to the interpleaded funds. And it seems to me this case is one where the district court below read that as a whole and said, you have settled everything with Mr. Clarkson, Mr. Imber, and their therefore Reliance, their insurance company. So your interest is zero in this $1 million. And the question is, why isn't that right?
Okay, Your Honor. That is not correct because under the Illinois Joint tortfeasor statute, in order for one party to be entitled to contribution from another tortfeasor.
Yes. No. The question is, what did you reserve in your settlement with the owners?
What exactly does 3.8 did 3.8 manage to reserve in the end?
But 3.8. Well, let's go back. Reliance was the insurer for the.
Yes, we know that. What did you reserve?
We reserved our rights against the fund. What happens in an interpleader action is the insurance company comes in, puts the money into the...
So, in effect, you're saying that you actually reserved a right to go against the owners because whether it's the insurance proceeds or their personal assets, whether it's in the court or anything else, it's them. It's their assets.
That's
just
right.
Happened to be contributed by an insurance company and put in the court. So that's really your whole argument, isn't it? You reserved rights against the owners, and because you did that, the operator can't get contribution from the owners, and that means they can't touch the money in the court. Isn't that your whole argument?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's the whole argument. Yeah. Now, what is your right? Supposing that that you're correct in that, and it's what the statute seems to say. So, suppose you're right, and the operator can't get a contribution from the owners, therefore can't touch the fund. I was unclear. What is your right to the fund?
Our right to the fund, Your Honor.
Do the owners still owe you money? Is that the problem?
We had never gotten any compensation from the owners of the King airplane.
I noticed. So there was a deal that they wouldn't have any personal liability.
There was a deal that they would not have any personal liability that was struck specifically with between Great Lakes and them in the settlement of another lawsuit.
Right. But when you go against them...
But the effect of our release, the release of them naming them specifically and then
reserving... But did you get anything from them before you released them?
No,
so they have no money, presumably, or something
exactly
like
right,
that.
Right.
Basically, the only assets of the owners that you could touch would be that $1 million of insurance proceeds.
That's correct.
So I see.
And then your question was the basis for our... position that the fund would be liable for this. We think that already in the record is the fact that there was a jury trial between the pilots of the King Air and the Great Lakes pilots and company, which although cannot be used against us as a matter of res judicata, we think can be used against them offensively collateral estoppel to show that they in fact were liable.
But you still have to establish to get that $1 million. You have to establish that the owners are negligent. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that remains to be seen. Somewhere.
The argument that we made below was that there was evidence in the record from that finding of 15% liability on Great Lakes that Great Lakes was liable. And as against Raytheon, there was no finding of liability in any other separate litigation, but there was a finding by the National Transportation Safety Board, which was mentioned by Judge Mills in his decision, that contributing to the severity of the accident was the failure of the air stair door to open.
So would there be, in principle, the possibility of a jury trial or a bench trial or something which, in the district court in which you're suing the owners?
We believed and argued below that we had enough in the record for the court to apply the doctrine of unclean hands and say that as against the passengers who are blameless, Great Lakes and Raytheon should be excluded from any participation
but
in the fund.
Suppose Great Lakes is excluded because of your primary argument that it just doesn't satisfy the contribution statute. Now, we still have that $1 million there. It seems to me you would have to establish the liability of the owners to the passengers in order to be entitled to that money, because if they're not liable, if the money is not available for contribution, then it would go back to the insurance company.
Well, actually,
right, and you've just told us how you would propose to do that. You're saying offensive issue preclusion and so on, but I mean it's just a really small, it's a basic procedural point.
Okay, well, to answer the question. If that's not enough, the showing that we made by offensive collateral estoppel and the settlements by Raytheon and the NTSB findings, then we propose to the court below that they be a mini trial.
Right, some sort of proof, and we'd be prepared
to do that.
Right. Okay.
Certainly. But the other question, Your Honor, is actually, do we actually have to show that? If Great Lakes and Raytheon are excluded, there are no other claimants to this fund. Everyone else has withdrawn their claims.
Oh, well, that's an interesting point. So are you saying that Reliance insured the owners against liability, and it must have assumed, they don't have a chance, so they deposit the money. But wouldn't Reliance be able to go to the court? I mean, suppose you try to prove the owners are liable, and you have your offensive collateral stopped, you have this and that, but nevertheless, the court decides, no liability, the owners were blameless. Couldn't Reliance come in and say, look, we deposit these proceeds thinking that there'd be liability, and we didn't want to get entangled, we didn't care who it goes to. But since liability hasn't been established, there's no trigger for our liability insurance. So give us our $1 million.
Let me give you two answers to that. The practical answer is Reliance went bankrupt after this. They're gone.
Oh, yeah, but that's even better. Because that means as a trustee, it's looking
and
for...
The second answer, Your Honor, is that I think in the course of the interpleader, that when they deposit the money and then move for summary judgment and then are dismissed from the case and discharged from all liability, they've waived all claims to that fund. They've said this fund is going to go to some one of these interested parties.
Okay, so you're saying Reliance has waived... Okay, so supposing that's right. Reliance waived, but suppose you can't establish liability. then I mean that would be a very puzzling. who owns the money? Is it escheat to the state?
I think it goes to the claimants of the fund because the Reliance made affirmatively decided to take the action to bring in all these parties and say, look, you all put your claims in here. And
I know, but it would be very odd for you. I mean, suppose you had a trial and it turned out that the owners were completely blameless. And nothing to do with the accident. And then there's this $1 million, which is their liability insurance. And what earthly basis would you have to claim that $1 million when it's from the insurers of parties who have been held to be blameless?
I believe because they firmly said, look, we know we're going to have to pay this money to someone. We don't want to be bothered with any further attorney's fees in defending these claims. Therefore, we divest ourselves of them. We give them to the court and to these parties.
So why isn't the answer at least that the court would have some equitable discretion over it?
Well, I think the court, it's a court of equity, and the court would always have some equitable discretion over it, Your Honor.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Goggin. Mr. Adler?
Good afternoon. I'm John Adler. I represent Great Lakes, the appellee in this case. Turning to the last first, you asked Mr. Goggin's questions about his entitlement to this money, and I say he's not entitled to it. He had no rights to reserve at the time he executed the release.
But I don't see why that's true at all, because paragraph 1 reserves what paragraph 3.8 says. Paragraph 3.8 refers to the funds. And then the district court judge makes a critical error or omission in his opinion where he says Reliance was not a tortfeasor. Well, of course not. It's the insurance company, but its position is derivative of that of its insureds, namely the owners of this plane, and the judge forgets that they're or somehow doesn't take into account that they're in the picture. And it's quite possible to limit your claims against somebody without releasing them altogether.
With respect to Your Honor's question and the judge's opinion, Mr. Clarkson and Mr. Ember were the owners of the aircraft and the insureds of Reliance.
I know.
They
That's
were
what
included
I'm saying.
On our release.
But your release says, except as set forth in paragraph 3.8, and then you go to paragraph 3.8, and it refers to the funds interpleaded by Reliance, namely the insurance company of the owners of the plane. Reliance couldn't care less about this if it weren't for Clarkson and Imbler.
What it would permit is counsel for the appellants and the appellants to reserve whatever rights they had at that time.
And they were not they were not giving a full release to Clarkson and Imbler. They were giving a partial release, you know, limiting it to $1 million. I mean, people do that all the time, limit to whatever the insurance will be.
That's absolutely factually correct, Your Honor. Having said that, that doesn't give the appellants an entitlement or a right to that money.
But what it does give them, it means, A, that they have not fully settled with Clarkson and Ember, which is significant for purposes of the Illinois statute, and, B, it means that the kind of proceeding that Judge Posner was talking about, in which they then take the next step and establish their right to some sort of recovery against Clarkson and Ember, happens, and right?
If they took that next step, my point,
well, the
Your
court
Honor,
wouldn't
they,
let them do it. I mean, they're here on appeal,
well,
I guess, asking for that opportunity.
If anything, that's proof of the pudding, as far as I'm concerned.
What do you mean?
What the court did, what Judge Mills did, was the fact that plaintiffs asked him to conduct such a proceeding seems to me to prove that they don't have a right to that money. As of the time we appeared
That's
before.
That's bizarre. So when you file a lawsuit, that proves that you don't have any right to recover?
No. When you ask for an evidentiary hearing to conduct that lawsuit.
Well, you have to have an evidentiary hearing to establish liability.
We did that.
No, but the owner's liability hasn't been established.
I got a judgment against the owners, Your Honor, in the case that was pending in St. Clair County.
But the passengers were not a party to
Absolutely.
That lawsuit.
And they don't have a right to that money.
That's not
But the passengers
right.
claim, if the
them.
Passengers say that the owners were negligent and the negligence contributed to the accident, then they have a standard negligence claim against the owners. and they can reach any assets of the owners, including insurance proceeds, that they haven't released. Isn't that true?
I'm not.
And it really is immaterial how many other people also have recovered against the owners if these people have never had their day in court.
But the point is, they can't have that day in court at this point, Your Honor.
Why not?
A, the statutes run, statutes of limitations.
They've been in court forever, though. There's no statute of limitations issue.
The only case pending at the present time is this one.
There's the interpleader action. Why is that not a case?
It is a case.
That's the kind of case where you resolve your rights vis-a-vis all the parties who have a claim to the fund. That's a case.
It is the case that's pending, yes.
And it's a case. I mean, it's a case where various... If you had never settled, you would have been part of that case, too. You would have been in there, you know, seeing if you could get a piece of that $1 million.
I'm not sure I understand that. We are trying to get all of the $1 million, Your Honor.
And you would have been if you hadn't settled also. You did settle and you want the money. If you hadn't settled, you would have wanted the money.
I see. Well, we did settle.
And what's your basis for getting the $1 million? What is your legal
basis?
That
we're entitled to it equitably, as Judge Mills found.
Entitled by what? By what
by
rule?
Virtue of the fact that we've never gotten any of our money back.
So this is a contribution action?
Yes, sir.
Contribution.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, what about the statute which says that if the release doesn't extinguish the liability of the defendant, then other defendants can't get contribution against
it. Well, we believe it did extinguish.
But the passengers' settlement with the owners did not release the owners completely. It left the $1 million in insurance proceeds. Those have to be treated as the owners' assets.
And today, the passenger appellants are here seeking to establish that they reserve that right, and they've done
no,
nothing.
No, but it's on paper. Their release said they were releasing the personal, you know, liability of the two owners, but not releasing their claim to the $1 million, which, as I say, are functionally, legally, they're assets of the owners. They happen to be insured, but, you know, that's just a way of, you know, distributing your assets in a different way. So it just seems an obvious application of the statute that since they didn't give a full release, you can't get a contribution.
Our position is they were more than well compensated in
no,
the settlement.
That's different,
that
and that's
be
irrelevant
true.
Because that's outside of the statute. We don't care whether they're well compensated, overcompensated, or what.
That relates to the right.
If they're well enough compensated, maybe they can't get a judgment for that $1 million, right? You're not allowed to get more in a litigated proceeding. You can't get more. If you've collected from 10 different tortfeasors and now all of your losses have been compensated, then you can't get any more from the next tortfeasor. So in this action for the $1 million against the owners, it would be a defense to disgorging any of the $1 million to them that they had been fully compensated by the other defendants.
And
that's not a basis for withholding that's not a basis for preventing them from trying to establish the liability and that they have unsatisfied damages.
And it also doesn't show that settling defendants have a right to contribution under this particular Illinois statute against non-settling defendants. I mean, I would think you at least would agree that this whole case turns on how we interpret paragraph 1 and paragraph 3.8 of that release, right? If we interpret it the way you say, it's a complete settlement against everybody and there was nothing left, and it's just, then the question is whether the insurance company should have gotten it, whether the district court should have been distributing it. If we interpret it the way the passengers think we should, and as Judge Posner was just describing, then you don't have a right because they were non-settling.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I take issue with that. Judge Mills found that we had paid far in excess.
We're reviewing Judge Mills, and B, whether you paid a lot of money or not, you're making an equitable argument in the face of a statute of the state of Illinois, which is the law that governs this case, that outlines the degree to which joint tortfeasors have rights of contribution against one another. there are lots of state statutes on that topic, and Illinois happens to have one.
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't disagree with that. Having said that, Judge Mills balanced those equities. He balanced whether or not the appellants had a right.
I don't see where the statute permits that.
I don't think the statute addresses that.
Well, you can't, if you have a statute that's pretty clear, you can't just say, well, the statute is clear, but the application in particular case would be inequitable. I mean, that's a very particularly bold form of statutory interpretation. It would create a lot of uncertainty, wouldn't it, in Illinois contribution law?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Not in a case on the facts of this case. I believe we settled this case properly within the contribution.
Did Judge Mills actually make a finding that the $52 million is the maximum to which the passengers could be entitled?
He made a finding that $52 million was far in excess of what
of their losses?
Of what they would have been paid based on our fault in the accident.
Well, but he also bases that on this litigation that they weren't party to. I mean, there's this sort of side argument going on in this case about whether issue preclusion was appropriately or inappropriately used, and I'm not sure we need to reach that, but to the extent he's looking at that state court litigation as the last word on all allocations of fault, I think there's a real problem.
I think all Judge Mills was doing is we haven't asserted the judgment here. He did note that we had the judgment. I think the only proper place that judgment played in Judge Mills' decision was supporting his position that we had paid in excess of what would have been attributable to our fault in connection with this case in the settlements.
Mr. Adler, are you familiar with a case from the Illinois court named Hall against Archer Daniels Midland Corporation?
I am not, Your Honor.
It's a 1988 case, but it seems to make the point you're trying to make here, that under the Contribution Act, there is a difference between whether the liability is one grounded in culpability and liability or grounded simply in status. And from the insurance company's point of view, it's here simply because of its status, not because it has any tort liability or culpability. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. You've made my point more artfully than I did.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Adler. Mr. Goggin, does he have any time left? No. Okay, we'll move on to the last case then.